On this week's episode of Video Culture, we'll talk Beverly Hills Cop and Beverly Hills Cop 2. We're not falling for a banana in a tailpipe.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another great episode of Video Culture, episode 20.
We made it to 20, folks.
I'm Ryan Acree, your host.
I'm Matthew Essery, your other host.
Yeah, you're our in-house like film critic.
Yes, and you are our in-house film novice, which gives us a nice dynamic.
But I have a great voice.
You have radio and audio engineering skills, because if this podcast was just me, it'd be me with my iPhone.
Really? Yeah.
And it would sound like crap.
You know, we're kind of like buddy cops ourselves. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, kind of like work together.
Yeah, we're a little bit mismatched for sure. You know, one of us is more straight laced than the other. Yeah.
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 So on this week's episode, we decided, just like in episode 10, where we did Fletch and Fletch Lives, we're doing another sequel, like type movie, and we decided to do Beverly Hills Cop and Beverly Hills Cop 2, starring Eddie Murphy.
But not 3, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, I mean, this is a double feature podcast anyway. I mean, come on. But 3, we'll get into that later. So let's talk about just sort of the overall like sort of franchise of Beverly Hills Cop itself. Starring Eddie Murphy. So the first movie was in 1984, and he's a Detroit policeman, and you know, sort of his friend dies, and in sort of investigating everything, he you know lands in Beverly Hills, but not on official cop duty.
Yes. His best friend gets killed, and it has something to do with Beverly Hills. So he kind of sneaks out there covertly to figure it out.
Right. And before we sort of continue, like, I think this is the most popular, movies that we have done.
It was a very popular movie at the time. It was huge in 1984.
This is more popular than Fletch. This is more popular than The Fly. This is more popular than The Crow, even. Yeah. I mean, as far as like reaching wide audiences. Yes. I mean, we're talking like blockbuster.
It was
films.
A blockbuster at the time.
But it kind of almost doesn't fall into that sort of cult category.
No, it's pretty mainstream.
Pretty mainstream, but it being like so far back in the past, it almost is sort of like a, you know, kind of like one of those movies like Scarface or
Well, just, you know, it's like War Games, you know. It's a movie that's not, was very much mainstream entertainment at the time, but because of age alone means a lot of people have not seen it.
Right.
You know, it's weird to us to think of it as a cult film or a little known film. But, you know, think of it was more than 20 years ago.
Right.
That's a long time.
Well, 1984, it's 2019 now, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I don't do math. What is that? So let's see.
It's like 35 years, I think.
So over 30 years.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So that at that point, you know, it's okay to shine a spotlight on a piece of popular entertainment when it's been that long, I think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you have to realize, it's 35 years. It's hard for us to think about, like, 30 years. Like, actually, a friend of mine said that, you know, somebody told him that they retired 30 years ago, and he said, oh, that must have been in the 70s. And I was like, No.
Yeah.
No, we're really old now. We're really old. You have to remember.
And I'm going to go down really a digression old. Just for a moment. I had a friend of mine come up to me the other day, and he goes, Matt, I watched an old movie I always meant to see the other day. And I was like, oh, really? What was it? And I was thinking he was going to say, like, The Maltese Falcon, or maybe
Gone with the Wind.
Or maybe something like The Good
Casablanca.
And the Bad. Maybe like The Good and the Bad, The Ugly, you know, or The Dirty Dozen. He goes, no, I saw a really movie, I think you've heard of it, called The Matrix.
Oh, my God.
And it hurt my soul, Ryan. It hurt my soul. And he's like, yeah, I really liked it, but I always meant to watch it. And I was like, is it really that old? And he's like, yeah, I wasn't born when that movie came out. And I was like, someday death will claim me.
For you young folks out there, we do apologize. We do know that there are movies that you haven't seen, and it's not your fault that you were born, you know, when you were. And it's not our fault that we were born when we were. But it's just hard for us to accept that these movies that we love are so old.
Yeah. We have to have an old man moment every now and then. Yeah. And that was my old man moment for the day, I think. I just had to share because it seemed way too appropriate for what you were talking about.
All right.
But yeah, so it came out 35 years ago.
Yeah.
But to your point, it was a huge movie.
Huge. And we'll get into the numbers later. But I mean, it was, and really, it's been a while since Eddie Murphy has done a rated R movie.
Yeah.
This is rated R. And, you know, because he's a cop and it's the 80s and it's kind of a funny action movie.
Yeah.
Like he kind of plays, you know, where he gets into situations where he's not a cop. So he can't be a cop. He can't be caught by the other cops that he's investigating.
But he's not supposed to be in Beverly Hills, basically.
Right. And he can't, like, flash his badge and say, oh, I have a warrant for this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so he has to fast talk his way through things. And he basically BS's people throughout the film. And it's very much like Fletch, which, to go back to a movie that we've already covered.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of – it's kind of like how Fletch would sort of, you know, act as a different character to confuse people or to lie his way through a situation. Eddie Murphy, as the character Axel Foley, does this a lot in Beverly Hills Cop. And he basically pretends to be someone else in a farcical way to trick people and get information.
And it's usually in a real funny kind of way.
Yeah, it's usually funny. It's not subtle or believable, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. So let's go through just a little bit. Beverly Hills Cop, 1984, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson.
Who were movie gods.
I mean, these are the action movie guys of the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s.
If you think a blockbuster style as we know it now was really honed by those two producers.
It was directed by Martin Brest, who also did Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Spies Like Us, Midnight Run, and Scent of a Woman.
This was his first movie, though.
Right.
He was hired to do War Games, but actually got fired off of War Games.
He did. And actually, some of the set design that you see from the Beverly Hills like police station, he kind of took his ideas from that. Because he would think that they would have a lot of money, and they would have a lot of high-tech tools and stuff like that. So that's why you see a lot of computers and stuff like that in the background of that of the Beverly Hills police station. So, which you didn't really see in the Detroit police station, which I think is very good from a director's point of view. To see the Detroit police station, and then you get to the Beverly Hills police
station. And it's much, much nicer, much more high-tech.
Right.
And when he's out in Beverly Hills, he runs afoul of other lawmen. One of them was played by one of our favorite character actors.
Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold. Again, we are very pro Judge Reinhold here on the Video Culture Podcast.
So the two guys that are supposed to watch out for him are Rosewood and Taggart, which are played by Judge Reinhold and John Astin. And also included in this movie, Paul Reiser plays his like buddy.
Has a very small part in the first one.
Small part, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's in the the funniest character to me was it's not on here. He's not on the second.
Which character are you thinking of?
Of Gilbert R. Hill, Inspector Todd.
Oh, Inspector Todd,
God. The Detroit inspector, he's like the head inspector or whatever.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
He almost stole the show, I think, from Eddie. I mean, he really was like that fast-talking, foul-mouthed, like, you know, police chief that you know.
It's that trope of the police chief, you better turn in your badge, you're in trouble.
I'm going to have your badge, you're going to, your ass is grass, or whatever,
Fantastic. He's so funny, and I don't know if he was friends with Eddie at the time, and that's how he got the part, but he definitely matches Eddie Murphy's, like, fast-talking energy.
Yeah.
And he's so funny in his small part as, like, the angry police chief character.
Right.
Yeah.
And so different from, like, the calm, you know, mannered Bogomil, you know? Like,
who's the police chief in Beverly Hills.
Right. You know? And where Taggart, like, you know, hits him or whatever. And then, like, Bogomil comes out and says, do you want to press charges against this, you know, guy? Yeah. And he's like, no, cops don't, like, press charges against other cops.
It kind of draws, like, a very broad stroke of difference between, like, the edgy Detroit area and the more kind of California laid-back environment.
Right. So
it's painted in very broad strokes, but it works in the film for sure.
Well, I think it does really play on these, like, 80s sort of stereotypes of California.
Oh, and, for sure.
And Beverly Hills. Like, it isn't really Beverly Hills. It's what people think Beverly Hills, you know, was in the 80s. You know what I mean?
It's kind of the movie idea of Beverly Hills.
Right.
You know, it's everyone's a supermodel, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone drives really fancy cars. Everyone's got tiny dogs that they walk around with, you know.
Everybody's wearing seersucker, suits and, you know.
Drinking lattes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, I mean, even the cops, like those guys, were dressed in, like, really sort of, like, light clothes. Yeah. And
it's all very broad. You know, it's not realistic.
No.
But it's fun, and it's fun to drop, you know, Eddie Murphy as this kind of fast-talking, quick-thinking, kind of roguish character into this real clean-cut environment and watch him just kind of wreak havoc.
Right. And there is, I mean, even though that it's a kind of a detective story, it's kind of an action movie, it's kind of a comedy, but I don't think it really, like, I don't think the comedy, like, was so much that it, you know, made it, like, sort of sour or made you not believe that stuff was real or whatever.
It's still, it's like, I mean, it didn't make the stakes seem unimportant.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like a Dragnet.
It wasn't farcical.
Yeah, to reference one of our old episodes, it wasn't like, you know, Armed and Dangerous. It wasn't silly.
Right.
It was funny.
Right.
And there's humorous elements to it, but because it's not quite a comedy, it's not quite an action film, it becomes a little bit of all those things, and it's this kind of tasty, like goulash of movie ideas, you know?
Well, I mean, even when you first see the opening scene, which I love, like, it's one of my favorite opening scenes to any movie.
Yeah.
And you see Eddie Murphy and trying to make a deal selling, like,
Stolen cigarettes.
Yeah, stolen cigarettes that already have the tax, you know, stamp on it. But you don't really know. Like, audiences, I mean, they know that they're seeing a movie called Beverly Hills Cop, and they know that he's in it, but they don't know, like, what sort of character that he's playing.
Yeah, you don't know if he's the cop yet or not.
Right, so. But you kind of get the idea that he is undercover. But, I mean, he does such a great job of selling it.
Well, to talk about the opening, because there ends up being a really great practical car chase in the opening of the film that has just amazing car stunts in it. They wreck, like, 15 cars in that. And I always love stuff like that nowadays because, again, it's 2019, and you don't see that kind of wholesale practical mayhem anymore.
Right, and there was just a small bit of opening dialogue, and it's just like, bam, it's like there's action happening.
Yeah, and I love those kind of stunts where you watch, you're like, how was someone not seriously hurt filming this? Because it's so kind of bonkers. It seems like really chaotic, and it's hard to remember that this kind of stuff used to be way more the norm in film, because now everything is so safe and computer generated. Yeah. It's just fun to see practical stunt work and exciting things like that.
Yeah,
it's refreshing.
Well, yeah, because, like, Eddie Murphy is supposed to be holding on to the back door that's open of this truck,
and it's clearly a stuntman, but it's still a stuntman who's hanging onto the back of while this is happening.
Yeah, and he's getting, like, hit against the side of the truck. I was like, that stuntman's getting beat the crap up, dude. Yeah.
And it's impressive, and it's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, you really do see, like, real stuntman work, I think, in that scene. My hat's off to Eddie Murphy's stuntman in that movie.
Yeah, it was really impressive.
Really,
and
really good.
That's one reason why I love watching older action films, because you just don't see it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we harp on it a lot, but I love practical stunt work. And the opening of Beverly Hills Cop has just a really cool practical car chase with lots of cool mayhem.
Right. And then as far as like the storyline, I mean, it's really easy to follow. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
I mean, they're always, you know, just like a detective story, they're always like either sort of one step behind, you know, the what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And really, even though that they're finding out, you know, information sort of illegally, they really can't do anything about it until, like, you know, the end or whatever.
Well, in actuality, the mystery part of this film is not very important.
Right.
It doesn't really matter why it's happening. It just gives, again, an excuse for Eddie Murphy to pal around with these other two cops to have, like, comedic moments where he gets to impersonate other characters. And and eventually fight the bad guys at the end.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Okay. So, I mean, what is actually happening in the plot?
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's unimportant, but it's not like the plot is unimportant, but it's just that, you know, what is actually happening, the action is, like, so, like, more fun than the actual, you know, sort of what's keeping the thing going, the MacGuffin of it.
Yeah, the actual meat and potatoes of the story is not that important. What's important is the fun interactions.
Right.
It's a movie of where all the joy really is in the characters interacting with each other. Even the action sequences outside of the very beginning one, which is a really cool one, aren't that important. I mean, there's a shootout at the end that's pretty cool.
Right.
It's got some good character moments. But even that's like, 10 minutes of the movie?
Yeah.
At the very end?
Yeah, and that's just like a shootout like at a house. Like they're just guys with machine guns shooting the other guys or whatever.
Yeah.
At a Beverly Hills house. I think that's what kind of like makes it sort of like crazy is like you're having a shootout at this big, expensive, you know, Beverly Hills mansion or whatever.
But it's not really, it's not shot that, you know, strong. It's not shot very strongly.
No.
I mean, it's not really cool looking. Mm-mm. It's just kind of, it's like, it's almost feels like it's there because they felt like they had to have an action sequence at the end.
Yeah. They had to have some, you know, special way to bring down, you know, like the character. But I mean, how like they finally shot the guy, you know, at the end and then like, you know, Bogomil. You know, because all throughout the movie, you know, like, they get caught in situations, and then Axel Foley basically has to lie and come up with some sort of way to explain it.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody buys it, or, like, you know, Tiger's like, oh, well, this is really what happened. Yeah. And, you know, but at the end, like, the big police chief shows up, and he's like, hey, what happened? But Mogomil basically has to lie, because otherwise he would get in trouble, you know?
So the Beverly Hills cops and they're actually the actual Beverly Hills policemen end up lying along with Foley, and they kind of bond over that.
Right.
So that's kind of their character arc, because they go from being very straight laced and very by the book to being a little bit of a rule breaker too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it's really the only character arc in the entire film, really.
Right.
Is their arc from going from being very straight laced to being a little more freewheeling.
Right. Yeah, and it's really great. I highly recommend watching it. I can't recommend it anymore.
Well, let's talk about some of the fun stuff in it. Like, I mean, you mentioned in the intro a classic little comedy bit with the banana in the tailpipe.
Oh yeah.
So if you haven't seen Beverly Hills Cop, and we recommend you watch at least the first one.
So there was a Facebook post somewhere, and somebody on a film forum site, and they asked, you know, what is the most, you know, funniest Eddie Murphy line. And the biggest consensus that I could see was the, you know, the line, I'm not falling for a banana in a tailpipe. Because the whole idea is like he's, you know, he's being basically watched by the cops to make sure that he doesn't do anything out of the ordinary or investigating. So what he does, he's staying at this fancy
swank,
the Beverly Hills Hotel or whatever. And then so he calls and orders room service
The cops,
Taggart and Rosewood who are watching him. And then while they're, you know, the guys out there with the maitre d's out, or whatever is out there with giving them all the food, he like takes off. But like before that, he takes some bananas and puts it in the tail, stuffs their tailpipe. So
with like two or three bananas. So the exhaust is clogged up, and it's such a random specific gag. And it's so silly. You're like, I guess that would work, but
yeah,
it's
like
such
what
a
is he? Yeah, you don't know what he's doing at first. He's like, okay, they're putting bananas up there, okay, and then you finally see when he finally takes off, like what's happening.
Yeah,
and then so because that they lost him, two other guys get assigned to watch him, and they're like, okay, we'll do it. So, but it's a black guy is one of the other guys, and so Axel Foley goes to. Mansion to kind of go to the gate to kind of see where this person that he's after is. And they go, yeah, we're not falling for a banana in the tailpipe. And he goes, yeah, I'm not falling for a banana in the tailpipe. Kind of make us.
Making fun of him, yeah.
He's like, man, you got to make us sound more natural.
Yeah.
I ain't falling for a banana in no tailpipe.
Yeah. And so one neat bit of trivia. The man who gives him the bananas in that scene where he gets the bananas is a young Damon Wayans.
Damon Wayans, his first movie ever.
I barely recognized him.
I know. My wife was like, is that Damon Wayans?
And straight up the credits, Damon Wayans.
Damon Wayans. That was his very first movie.
Yeah.
So, Eddie Murphy gave him his, I don't know if it was Eddie, but whoever the casting director was or whoever, gave him, that's his first big break.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say big, but because it was a small role. But
yeah, but it's definitely a role where he was in the scene with Eddie Murphy, and they were the focus of the scene. So that's a pretty cool debut, even if it's a small one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he kind of played like a, it kind of had to do with the really popular part of the movie.
I mean it's memorable for sure.
Also, Bronson Pinchot is in it.
He is. Yeah, Balky himself from Perfect Strangers.
He plays Serge.
Yes, and it's a pretty funny part. It's a pretty funny bit part. Yeah, he's a clerk in an art gallery who's really into espresso.
Yeah. And you have to have it with the lemon. Was it the lemon twist or lime twist?
Yeah, would you like it with the twist of lemon? Yeah.
Absolutely great role. And then also playing one of the bad guys, one of the henchmen, is one of the guys that we've talked about before, Jonathan Banks.
Yeah, from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He is in a lot of things.
I looked up his filmography. He is in a lot of stuff, man. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah. He has worked consistently literally his entire life, I think. Yeah.
He's one of those guys that you'll recognize and you're like, I don't know where from. Now, Better Call Saul and,
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad. I mean, these are really popular, so people know who he is
now. They're trying to recognize him, but by the time, he was just one of those that guy actors.
Yeah.
And he really didn't get his due until those shows because he was a focal point of those shows. He was one of the main characters.
Right.
And now every time I see him, I'm like, hey, it's Jonathan Banks.
It's Jonathan Banks, yeah.
And I've seen him probably in dozens of things, and he was always just that guy.
Right.
So that's, if you stick with it long enough, you'll get that memorable role. And people will remember your stuff.
So, yeah. So, I mean, we talked about him in Armed and Dangerous.
Yeah.
And he plays this very similar sort of...
He plays a henchman, yeah.
Yeah, henchman, yeah. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
And he's good. He's very menacing.
Yeah. A little bit of trivia, though, that I'll go ahead and reveal now is that he also starred in 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
But he played a cop, and Eddie Murphy played the criminal.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. He's got a very tough guy demeanor. So
yeah.
Jonathan makes it, if you wanted a tough guy for a while, he was one of those go-to actors who seemed legitimate.
I mean, he can even play a tough guy cop.
He seems grizzled. Yeah.
So let's talk about Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Which is it's very similar to Beverly Hills Cop 1, but it's like if you turned everything up by like 5.
Right. Well, first off, it was directed by Tony Scott.
And there is a huge difference between Martin Brest and Tony Scott when it comes to being visual.
Yes. I mean, you were talking about this is the guy that did Die Hard. This is the guy that did – what other movies did he do?
Oh, no. Well, Tony Scott did – he did Top Gun. He didn't do Die Hard.
Oh, he didn't do
Die Hard. He did Top Gun. He did Crimson Tide.
He did The Last Boy Scout.
That's what you were thinking of, Last Boy Scout. Yeah. Very visual movie.
Yeah.
Man on Fire. I think that's a True Romance.
True Romance.
But yeah, just movies that have a real flair to them. And immediately when you turn on Beverly Hills Cop 2, like Beverly Hills Cop 1 had a real kind of gritty, realistic vibe to it.
Yeah.
Even though it was funny, like it opens with like shots of like real people in Detroit.
Yeah.
It seems almost like a documentary in the very first few moments.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about Beverly Hills Cop 2 seems real.
Right.
It is very much a movie.
It is. And
everything looks cool.
Yeah.
Everything is like everything is just like immaculately shot and framed, like perfect, like magic hour lighting.
Well, I mean, Beverly Hills Cop was in 84. Sequel Beverly Hills Cop 2 was in 87.
Yeah.
So you're only talking, you know, what, four, you know, 3 years later. Yeah.
But Eddie Murphy became such a big star, such a big movie that Beverly Hills Cop 2 was a hugely anticipated film.
And really,
film.
Was like it was released later in 84. Like in December, so really almost like 85. But what I was saying is like it's such a clean shot look to it. It's the colors are much more vivid and crisp, and it seems like even if you watch it today, it still seems very modern
it's
looking.
Slick. That's the word. It's slick.
It is very, very slick.
And because Tony Scott came from like his brother Ridley came from that British directing wave of where they're all commercial directors. Right. So they have this real like glossy sensibility where everything just again doesn't look like reality. It looks better than reality.
Right. And it all
everything just looks epic.
Right. Yeah. And it almost all takes place in you know, Beverly Hills Cop, there's a, in Beverly Hills,
yes.
I should say,
yeah.
There's a little bit in Detroit, but it's mostly just at the, you know, at the station
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like just a bare minimum of setup
yeah.
to get him into Beverly Hills again. But to really just to personify the difference between the two movies, in the first film, Axel, Eddie Murphy's character, drives a beat-up blue four-door sedan.
Right.
It's even a joke in the movie that he drives a crappy car.
Right.
In Beverly Hills
from
Cop 2.
From high school.
From high school. In Beverly Hills Cop 2, unexplained really, he drives a beautiful red convertible.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah. If you want to just like sum up the difference, like the two different styles of the movies from first movie to sequel. That visual cue alone lets you know you're watching two very different visual movies.
Yeah, I just did not get that. I was like, wait, he's driving a blue convertible. Why did he get rid of the Nova? Or why is it different?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
And it's just like he went from driving a piece of crap to driving this dream car because again, it ditches the realistic aspects of the first film and goes fully into this is a movie where everything is better than reality.
Yeah.
Everything gets just turned way up. Like even all the characterizations are a little bit sillier.
Yeah.
Like, you know, his cop friends from Beverly Hills, they're not really normal people anymore. Like Judge Reinhold, who plays Rosewater.
Rosewood. Did you get it wrong on purpose? Because they call them like Roseweed and Rosewood.
No, I messed it up. Rosewood.
But yeah, that's one of the running jokes in the.
Yeah, you're right. It is one of the running jokes in the film. But in the first one, they have him make a reference to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid during the final shootout. She's like, oh, he likes movies. That's neat. But he just makes a reference to it. And you cut to Beverly Hills Cop 2, where everything is dialed up in silliness. He's obsessed with like action films, and he wants to be an action hero. He's got a huge collection of guns, and he carries on a switchblade because he wants to feel like Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
He's got posters of Stallone
all
around his apartment, which is an in-joke in and of itself.
Right. We'll get to that in a minute. But they keep saying, because every time they find something, it's like a little disturbing. Then he has all these weapons and stuff, and he has like a switchblade, and like, oh, Billy, we got to have a talk. We got to talk about this.
And it's like he went from being kind of a normal guy who just liked movies to being like a action movie obsessed weirdo.
Yeah, a real really weird enthusiast, whatever. Even like guns hanging on the back of his door in the bathroom and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like really crazy. Now, I want to say before we continue, always doing the sequel. Obviously you can't have the same bad guys. I mean, I guess you can in Die Hard movies, whatever. But because if you don't catch the bad guy,
you get that or, back, yeah. Or, yeah, or it would be the bad guy's brother if we're going to talk about Die Hard with a vengeance.
I know, right? You have Eddie Murphy returns, obviously, as Axel Foley. Judge Reinhold returns as Rosewood. John Ashton returns as Taggart. You have Paul Reiser is back.
With a much bigger part. He gets to be funnier in the sequel.
Yeah, Jeffrey Friedman. Ronnie Cox returns as Lieutenant Andrew Bogomil, who's not really in the movie that
much. He's not in it that much. No, he's really not.
And then Gilbert R. Hill returns as Inspector Todd,
yeah.
which is still fantastic. I mean, he still played, You know, but I mean, they amped up his role like a little bit, but almost the same. He still gives, you know, Eddie Murphy like a real stern talking to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But to go back to the Damon Wayans, like, there are some fun like cameo additions in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Hugh Hefner plays himself.
Yeah, which is him.
Because they go to the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah, again, because everything is a little bit bigger in this film, so it's a little bit, you know, wackier.
And Chris Rock is also his film debut and as the parking valet.
Which makes me think it probably had something to do with Eddie Murphy helping out young African-American comedians.
Right. You and I did look on IMDb, just to be truthful, honest, full disclosure. Yeah. There was another movie, I think, that he got like an unaccredited role.
Yeah.
So this was technically his first credited role.
Yeah. And again, it's just a fun little scene that doesn't really have anything to do with anything. It's just he has a solo moment with Eddie Murphy at one point as a valet. You know?
Right. Yeah. Because they, what was it? Rosewood commandeered, you know, a vehicle.
A cement truck. Yeah.
And a cement truck.
Yeah. Like it ups the car, the vehicular mayhem from the first one.
Yes.
Like with the cement truck chase. And like easily like 20 cars get towed.
Yeah, because there's a car chase like in the middle of the movie. Like right in the middle of the movie. There's this car chase with like an armored truck or you know, armored vehicle.
Yeah.
And you know.
They're chasing in a cement truck. Yeah.
So yeah, there's just like car mayhem.
Yeah, and again, it's cool, but it's bigger. It's less disconnected from reality.
Yeah,
it's all very fun.
Yeah,
but it is one step removed from reality, even than the first one. It's very much more a movie. It exists more in a movie world than the first one does.
Right. Gilbert Gottfried has a funny scene too.
Gilbert Gottfried, who's really underrated in my opinion as being a funny presence in films. He plays a person who gets bamboozled by Axel Foley.
Yeah.
And he's really funny in his brief scene.
Yeah, that little scene. I mean, that scene really really reminded me of like Fletch, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, like how he's, you know, something that would happen in like a Fletch movie or something.
He threatens
like
Gabriel with fake traffic tickets.
Right. Yeah.
As a way to use his computer temporarily.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
The same with like the, you know, like the where he Axel Foley breaks in the gun club and he has, you know, like a bag, and it's supposed to be like he just has like, you know, Rosewood's bag of vitamins, but he pretends it's like, you know, this highly explosive nitroglycerin, like whatever.
Yeah.
And then like he's like, I'm supposed to deliver this to, you know, this guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're like, I'll just leave this here. And they're like, no, why don't you take it back there to him?
And again, that's so far removed from what could happen in reality.
Right.
That it goes back to the fact that it's wackier than the first one in every way.
Yeah, just sillier.
But and one other big, pretty big name that's in the film is Brigitte Nielsen's one of the bad guys. You know?
Brigitte Nielsen.
Yeah. When she was definitely in that post. It was around the time of Rocky IV, a couple years before. Actually, it might have been 2 years before. I think Rocky IV was 89.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Rocky IV was before that.
Okay. Well, it was around that time period. So she was still kind of in her statuesque sort of Nordic like model thing. So she's striking in the film, and she plays a thief basically, and you know. She definitely has a unique presence that works really well when juxtaposed with Eddie Murphy, you know.
And Dean Stockwell plays one of the bad guys. Most people, like, I know Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Well, that's where I got to know him too when I was a kid, but he's been in a lot of good movies.
Yeah, he has been in a lot of movies.
He's a great actor.
He is.
It's always good. It's one of the guys where you're like, hey, it's nice to see him, you know.
Right.
He's a good presence.
Right.
So the plot has something to do with basically bank robbers and puzzle crimes. It almost matters even less than the plot in the first film.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, a lot of detective movies, like, you're kind of on board trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But it's almost like you're not really on board trying to figure it out. You're just on board for the ride.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're there to watch Eddie Murphy have fun.
Yeah, it's almost like the plot. This one, the plot, I think, takes a bigger back seat.
Yes. Because now
you're just on board for them figuring out all this stupid stuff, going to strip clubs and you know, whatever.
And there's,
you know?
there's bigger comedy scenes, there's a lot more action. There's more gunfights, there's more car chases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot more, because there's surprisingly little action in the first one, but there's easily three times as much action in the sequel.
Right.
You know, so yeah, you're right. The story matters even less here than it does in the first one. Right. Still, I think it's a wildly entertaining movie.
Right.
But because it's so cartoony,
yeah,
it makes it feel you're not as engaged with it, in my opinion.
No, yeah, I think that's what leaves people out, and I think that's what leaves audiences out a little bit. I mean, it's fun to watch. I mean, you can sit and with a big tub of popcorn.
It is a popcorn movie, for sure. Yeah,
popcorn movie and a big soda, and enjoy the
heck
out of
it. Have a good time. Yeah.
Smile and laugh. And
any movie that's got Judge Reinhold in a trench coat shooting two shotguns at once is a movie I'm at least going to like a little bit.
But there's more car crashes. There's more explosions. Mm-hmm. There's more shootouts. There's a higher body count. Yeah. There's more sort of jokes. But I don't think that it's it's almost done slightly cartoon.
It's sillier.
It starts to get sillier
than the first one.
Right.
Judge Reinhold fires a rocket launcher by accident and kills the bad guys.
And nails the target. Bam. Not even aiming. Just, how do I do this?
Police Academy nonsense, you know? I'm going to repeat that sentence. Judge Reinhold fires a rocket launcher by accident and kills the bad guys.
But Dad,
she's worried about your unit. Call back to our pilot episode. If you haven't listened to that one, that's on the archives at video-culture.com.
I know.
Episode one.
I know. It's but yeah. I mean,
we love Judge Reinhold. We're trying to say.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, and really, I think the ending was a little. For just a bad guy to just get, shot, Bridget Nelson just get shot by a tiger at the end. I mean, I just kind of felt like, oh, that's it. They just get shot.
The movie's over now. We're out of time.
Over. All right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they didn't even have, maybe they think we have to end it the same way we ended the first one. So there's he's going to get caught and then the guy comes in and shoots him through the side. What is this all about?
It's just a bigger, flashier shootout. And that really sums up the difference, man. It's just a bigger, flashier film, but it's not as good.
Well, one thing that really got me about the movie, and I want to bring this up now.
Okay.
There was something I forgot to bring up in one, but that's a,
go ahead.
Minor point. But while we're talking about the ending, during the scene where the police chief is up there explaining to the press they've caught the alphabet crimes people, whatever. Yeah. And it's this guy, it's Dean Stockwell's character, which is Chip Kane. All the rest of the guys, like Axel Foley and Taggart and Rosewood, have figured out that it's not.
Yeah.
It's really this other guy, Dent. And also this other, lady or whatever. It's also, Bridget Nelson's character, Carla Fry, which you hardly even
I didn't realize that was her name. I watched the movie yesterday and I could not tell you her name.
Yeah.
I was like, it's Bridget Nelson.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So, but the other guy is like Dent, right?
Yeah.
You kind of figure out, they've already figured out that, Kane is who they're, pinning it on. He's just, the guy taking the fall for it.
The patsy.
Right. But you see in the movie where Carla Fry shoots Chip Kane, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Chip Kane is supposed to be the guy. But the cop or the police chief says, here's the cop that shot Chip Kane. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, wait a second. So is the police chief in on this? Because all in the movie, they keep talking about how all the good people who work at the, Beverly Hills, team get taken off of the cases and they all leave the precinct.
I feel like that was something that may have been in an earlier draft of the film. And they maybe wrote it out and didn't clean up all the loose ends. It's definitely there. You're right. Those threads are there, but the movie's just not concerned with any of that stuff.
Right, and he gets fired for just basically being a bad
jerk.
Police chief and being a jerk. And I was just it almost seemed like he was kind of in on it. Like, it almost seemed kind of weird. Like, I was kind of like, wait, what?
Mm.
And it just didn't make any sense.
The movie does not stand up to that kind of scrutiny at all. No. Not even a little bit of scrutiny.
Right.
It's not what it's trying to do, man. It's just, like I said, it's popcorn, man. It just wants you to, drink your giant soda, eat your big tub of popcorn, and watch Eddie Murphy goof on people.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah. Am I thinking too much of it?
Yeah, you really are. I mean, and that's not to be dismissive, because I mean, I'm a film critic, of course. Right. I believe in analyzing films.
Yeah.
But, and it, don't get me wrong, it's sloppy.
Right.
But I just think the filmmakers didn't care. That wasn't what they were trying. They didn't put the effort into it. That wasn't something they were concerned with. Because, again, I like Tony Scott's films. They're really cool to look at. He's not concerned with logic.
Yeah, well, I mean, they also shoot, you have to remember, they change these scripts a lot, and they shoot on, like, yes, different days.
Yeah.
So they might have, like, done, well, let's do it this way, and then they shot this way, and then they're like, oh, well, we've already got this shot. Well, we can't change it now. We can't go back and reshoot.
Yeah.
So we're just going to leave it this way, you know? It's just like, and then people just go, oh, well, why is it like this? Oh, well, whatever. Like, you know. Well,
And people don't notice like that. I mean, if a movie's really working, you're not going to notice those kind of things typically.
Right.
Like, I mean, and
like, wow, because really, I mean, if you think about it, there is not a lot of subplots, and they probably just, you know, came in and like, okay, let's get rid of all these like stupid subplots. Let's just follow the main thing, do funny stuff.
Yeah. People are here to see Eddie Murphy be Eddie Murphy.
Right. It's almost like Eddie Murphy was the big star. We're just letting him be the big star and like let him.
And everything else will just happen around him.
Right.
And that's part of the reason why Beverly Hills Cop 3 is not any good.
No. I mean, and Judge Reinhold and Bronson Pinchot. Well, Bronson Pinchot is not in the second one.
He's in the third one, yeah.
But he is in the third one.
Yeah.
But Judge Reinhold and Bronson Pinchot are the only, and Eddie Murphy are the only three actors that show up in three.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I don't know. It's a much sillier movie.
Yeah. It's like they kept, like, the
Beverly Hills. And I want to say, Beverly Hills Cop 3 was done in 1994.
Yeah, it was done much later. But the Beverly Hills Cop trilogy, I know we're not really going to talk about three, but the trilogy as a whole is a perfect textbook example of film sequels getting worse as they go along.
Yeah.
Because the first one is arguably a classic. Mm-hmm. Second one is good, dumb, fun. And the third one's just dumb. Because they get bigger, they get sillier, and they get less smart.
Now, the three is directed by John Landis. And it does have a cameo of George Lucas,
which is cool and all, but it's such a silly film.
It is. It's like it's kind of like where you have like Disney World. They kind of play like a parallel to Disney World,
yeah.
And where like the park is like doing like a cover up for some other crime thing, and it's like funny because like the thing is like. And Axel Foley is there again to investigate, but he's investigating, like, what's going on, like, in the park, but he can't investigate because it's like
Disney World.
Yeah, just Disney World.
Down and super.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and he gets thrown out because there's one time where he shoots his gun.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's.
Yeah. But it's like, as dumb as two is compared to one, three is really dumb compared to two. And they, like I said, it's like. They just get bigger, they get broader, and they get just stupider.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. Because like I said, one is such a good movie, two is really fun, and it's a shame they didn't stick the landing.
Well, here's also what happens in these sequels. You know, Eddie Murphy was, you know, hitting it out of the ballpark, you know, and still like making great movies. I mean, he went on from two to make, you know, Coming to America,
The Golden Child. Which wasn't a big hit, but man, that's a cool movie.
I mean, he was just, and I have to pull out his filmography, but I mean, it's just like you look at the movies that he did, and you're like, oh yeah, there's the movie.
He was a huge star.
Yeah, and then, so when he did three, it was like the movie budget, a lot of that budget has to go to pay the big actor to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So it leaves a lot less for the rest of the cast, or pay for a really good script, or pay for a really awesome director, or pay for a really, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And you never know, man. Maybe he wasn't as into collaborating. Maybe he wanted to be more focused on him. You can certainly feel that in two, where the movie's way more focused on him in part two than it is part one.
Right.
Like in part one, he allows the other characters to be kind of funny, some too.
Yeah.
But in two, it's way more about him.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire film.
Exactly.
Which is fine and all, but it makes it a weaker film.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'll bring up the last thing about one.
Okay.
Another scene that I didn't quite understand.
Okay, hit me.
He goes to the dinner club, or goes to the club or whatever, And there's that funny scene where he tells the guy, like, he goes...
Where he pretends to have an STD and to be the boyfriend of of the main villain.
So he's like, oh, well, maybe you should go tell him. He's like, yeah, I think it's like, you know, came from the clinic. Anyway, so he I didn't understand that whole scene other than just a setup so he could do that little joke. Because all he does is basically tell the bad guy, like, I'm after you.
Yeah.
You know?
And he beats up the henchman briefly. Yeah.
He beats up, you know.
Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks. I mean, that was, I was like, he didn't get any information from him. He didn't like do any of this. He didn't plan something on him.
They just wanted that comedy bit of him acting flamboyant.
And like a, you know, prestigious club or something like that.
Yeah. It's indulgent. And it's fine. You know, but the movie's full of digressions like that that don't really matter.
Well, I mean, everywhere there he had, you know, like a where he went somewhere or did something or did, you know, something weird. It was like to get information. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was like, and that one was just like to be like, I'm on to you. Yeah. You know,
it felt like they wanted one more comedy beat, you know?
I know, because like, they were kind of out of like information because he'd kind of like figured it all out by that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, the movies are really only concerned with letting Eddie Murphy be funny. That's almost their entire goal. Like, look how cool and funny Eddie Murphy is.
And he is.
He is. He's got an amazing laugh.
Yeah.
And he laughs a lot in the films, and it's such a fun, endearing laugh. It's infectious.
I love how the second one like starts off with his laugh. We can't stop. Like before, I get to my notes. We've talked this whole time and have failed to mention one of the most popular songs from any movie, which is "Axel F."
Yeah,
by Harold Faltermeyer.
The theme song. Like I mean, if you just do it out like dun 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 dun, you immediately know what I'm talking about. Yes. You know, and I sped through it, and you just know it.
It's that recognizable. It is.
Yeah, like if you've heard it once, it's an earworm. We'll just be walking around going dun 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 dun.
Yeah. Well, I'll mention. So when we get into the now that we're getting into like the notes part of the show, I will say I watched a interview with Harold Faltermeyer about the song and Axel F and all that, and it almost didn't make it into the movie,
which is wild because it's in so much of both films,
right?
Well, that's his theme song.
I know. Well, it kind of became his theme song. So what happened was, Jerry Bruckheimer and like Don Simpson, the way that he explained it is, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson, he's like in the 80s, there was like a lot of drugs and a lot of cocaine and stuff like that. And he said, Tom Simpson was like ruthless. He's like, one day you're like really awesome. And he's telling you how awesome it is. And the next day he like hates everything that you've done. You know what I mean?
Because
like,
drugs then, give you mood swings.
Right. And then like you could just be out. You're just like out of the movie. Well, no, you know, F you, you're, you know, we'll find somebody else or whatever. So he's like, you know, you just kind of don't know kind of where you stand. So when he first wrote like Axel F and wrote the movie, he brought it in. For him, for Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson and Martin Brest to kind of look at. And, you know, they were like, no, I don't think this is working. I don't think this is working. Do you have anything else? He's like, okay, here, let me play you this. And they played. So I was like, no, this is not working. This is not working. And so he's like, okay, well, let me work on it some more and I'll come back again. So he knew that, like, if he came back, like, if they didn't like what he brought that time, you know, the second time, like he was going to be out and they were going to find somebody else. So they came in again a couple weeks later and they have the director and they have, you know, Don Simpson's like, you know, they play it again and he plays Axel F. He plays like the song and, you know, to the thing, the first time you hear the theme song in the movie and, you know, Don Simpson's like, I just don't know if it works. I just don't know. And Jerry Bruckheimer is like, well, I mean, I don't know either. And then he looked at Martin and he said, Martin, what do you think? And he's like, play it again. And so he's like, okay. So the guy like rewinds the film, plays it, and he plays it, and it stops, and like everything gets quiet. And he goes, that is the most perfect score I've ever heard to any movie.
Yeah. It's instantly iconic.
Right.
Because it doesn't sound like anything else.
Right. Well, not a lot of stuff back then. You know, like some movies were made with, you know, synthesizers and. You know, there was a lot of like foreign films and stuff like that that were made with synthesizers, but not any American films that were made. Yeah, at
especially,
that time.
Especially not something like this, where it was like an action film, mainstream sort of thing.
Well, I mean, you already had like, unless it was like a sci-fi movie or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you already had what was it? The like Midnight Express. What we're talking about? What was the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? The Running Man.
The Running Man. Well, yeah, and you had like Escape from New York, which had you know keyboards and stuff. But I mean, but this was like this was a very much a mainstream like popcorn film that had this kind of unique sound to it that you wouldn't think would go with it if you just heard it in a vacuum. But when you see it paired with the images, it just works so well.
Because it's so peppy and so light.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of takes away some of the seriousness of it and really brings you into that more comedy aspect.
It makes
of
it feel fun and light for sure.
Right. And I think that's why it works a lot with Fletch.
Yeah.
You know, and Fletch Lives.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I just wanted to tell that like quick story.
Well, and I also want to say, guys, if you haven't seen it yet, I mean, this was posted a few months back, but Ryan wrote up a great little retrospective piece on Faltermeyer for our website, which is again, video-culture.com. Mm-hmm. It's in our dialogue section where we post all of our film essays, and it's a great read. It really is.
I love Harold Faltermeyer.
It's fascinating stuff, man.
He wrote Axel F. and wrote two of the main songs of the movie, which we'll get into a little bit. So I have a ton of notes for these. They were so popular, these movies. Okay. So, you know, we've talked about this in the pre-show. Sylvester Stallone was originally intended to be cast as Axel Foley.
He was.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is crazy to think about what that movie would have been.
What in the world? I still cannot see it.
Well, and he rewrote the script to make it way more of an action film.
Right.
Like the friend who gets killed was going to be his brother.
Right.
And so he's going to get revenge. Yeah. And the female friend in the first movie, which we didn't really talk about, was going to be his love interest.
Right.
But to get an idea of what it might have been, the original he had changed the character's last name to Cobretti.
Yeah. And then so it was supposed to be more of an action film with the large gun death battle scene at the end. On one of the drafts, like Rosewood was called Siddons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they,
which I believe is a name he recycled for one of his other films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was killed. He was killed off halfway through the script.
To give him more motivation to be a revenge seeking like action hero. Very Stallone-esque kind
of
thing.
Or just get rid of this other character who's kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Make it all about Stallone.
Make it all about action movies or whatever. Yeah. And then the final had a stolen Lamborghini playing chicken with an oncoming freight train being driven by the ultra slime bad guy. Like, that was going to be the ending.
Yeah. Like, Stallone, he likes really just a straightforward, kind of lunkheaded action movies.
Yeah.
He does. And like I said, the character in that draft was actually, last name was Cobretti.
Right.
And to give you an idea of what Beverly Hills Cop might have been like, Stallone took that name when he left the movie and went and made his own film called Cobra.
All right, I'm getting to that.
Okay. And I'm going to steal your thunder.
Well, ultimately, the ideas were too expensive for Paramount, and Stallone pulled out 2 weeks before because he really just couldn't see like the funny lines, and he didn't really get the idea of like, okay, you want to make a funny movie. He wanted to make an action movie, and they're like, no, they didn't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
So he left like 2 weeks before shooting started.
Like really, really suddenly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he took most of the ideas. Now, Cobra was based on a book from what I remember. But then he took all of his ideas and just rolled it in.
Yeah, but Cobra. It's not much like the original book either. So, right. I mean, it's I get a feeling that his version of Beverly Hills Cop would have been very similar to Cobra. And Cobra is a now don't get me wrong, Cobra is a guilty pleasure, but that is a profoundly dumb movie.
Yes.
It is lunkheaded.
Yeah.
I kind of like it, but it is some trash.
Yeah. Every time I think of that movie, I think about that scene where he goes home to his little crappy apartment, gets out his pizza box, cuts like the smallest sliver off of one slice and just eats it cold.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and puts the pizza box back in the fridge.
And I'm like, what? Yeah. What is this supposed to mean? What does it have to do with
anything? Instead of never going to watch Cobra, now is the time to talk about this. That is, to me, that's one of the weirdest things in all of 80s cinema.
And it has no explanation for it. I'm still dumbfounded. Yeah. Still to this day.
Yeah. So, again, that could have been Beverly Hills Cop.
Thankfully not.
Luckily, we don't live in that timeline.
My gosh.
Yeah.
All right. Other actors considered for Axel Foley were Richard Pryor, Al Pacino, and James Caan.
Now, I could see James Caan, or I can't see Pacino, but can you imagine the weirdness of Richard Pryor at that time in this role?
In, like, the mid-80s.
Trying to shoot guns and, like...
I'm Axel Foley!
He could have handled the comedy, sure, but, like, the action hero stuff, I can't see him doing it at all.
Yeah, like, I can see him, like, trying to sell cigarettes at the beginning, but I can't see him, like...
Hanging off the back of a truck that's careening down the road, Actually, I'd like to see that movie, though, to be honest with you, because I can't picture it.
Yeah, or, pulling out a gun on folks or something like that. Like, I don't know, it'd just be too awkward. Him being a cop. Like, The shooting script was literally pasted together with many scripts written for the project over the years. When they were stuck, Eddie Murphy would just improvise dialogue or create a scene.
It shows.
Yeah.
But it works because Eddie Murphy was at the height of his powers at this point.
Well, I mean, and he was really like improv, you know? I mean, that's where his strength is, I mean, obviously. So in the Eddie Murphy... He became very tired when filming the police station sequences, so the crew offered him coffee, but he refused most of the time because he doesn't like to take drugs of any kind. So eventually, he took some small sips of coffee and became very energized, and he actually ad-libbed the Super Cops monologue. So that's where tells the story to Bogomil about what happened at the...
At the strip club
or whatever, and he's like, it's
complete nonsense.
Are super cops, you know?
That's a really great monologue. It's one of the highlights of the film. That's interesting.
So, and you can actually see in the movie where the guy playing Taggart and John Reinhold have really odd looks on their face and they're like looking down. It's not because they're embarrassed about like the story.
Yeah.
It's because they're trying to keep from laughing.
I imagine it was hard with someone like Eddie Murphy at that time.
Right. So Judge Reinhold said that he had to put his hand in his pocket and pinch his thigh really hard to keep him from laughing on screen. And I remember I read this before I watched the movie, and when I watched it, and you can see Judge Reinhold has he has a really odd look about his face.
He's trying to hold it together.
It's almost like he's trying to be stone faced. It's almost like like when you're really trying to be like super still or something like that. Let's see, where'd I go? I lost my notes. All right, I talked earlier about Gilbert R. Hill, who plays Inspector Todd. Inspector Todd, like Gilbert R. Hill, was only in 3 movies.
Really?
Beverly Hills Cop, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Really?
Yes.
Like, what did he do otherwise? I mean, like, was he a writer, a comedian?
He was a real-life Detroit Police Department homicide detective.
That's why he came up. He's so...
so good.
But he's so funny in it. That's kind of surprising.
Yes. And he later served as president of the Detroit City Council and even ran for Detroit mayor in 2001.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And he said the only difference between Inspector Todd and my real life is that I don't curse as much in real life. Because he does. He has like the most amount of like in the short of time that he's on screen. Yeah. Like I think every sentence has a one or two curse words.
Yeah. He's so good. It's amazing that he wasn't an actor. He's really good in both films.
Yeah. He was so good. Hey, so funny. So funny. Unfortunately, he did pass away in February of 2016. So, but thank you, Gilbert R. Hill, for your performances. They were fantastic.
Here's some of the highlights of the films for sure.
The second movie with Eddie Murphy and Jonathan Banks, I already mentioned, is 48 Hours, blah, blah, blah. We're skipping over that note. Okay, so to cast the roles of Rosewood and Taggart, the director paired up various finalists and asked them to do some improvisation to get a feel for their chemistry. Yeah. So he paired up Judge Reinhold and John Astin and told them, You're a middle-aged couple, married for years. You're having a conversation on an average evening. So Judge Reinhold immediately picked up a nearby magazine, and the two improvised the 5 pounds of red meat in his bowels, almost exactly as it appeared in the movie. So yeah. That was all Judge Reinhold. Yeah. Like, that was all just him
And that's one of the funniest scenes in the first film is them sitting on their stakeout. He's reading this magazine about how red meat stays in your colon. And Ashton's like, I don't want to know that.
Well, I think that's what kind of makes it, buddy. I mean, that chemistry between them really, even though that it's not like Lethal Weapon or not like, it kind of is a buddy cop movie, but it's not because Eddie Murphy almost kind of plays the third wheel in the whole deal.
Yeah, you almost see a movie just about those two characters. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what definitely made it great. So hands off to the to those guys and for the director for coming up with that whole thing. Just some boring trivia that the City Hall building in the film is the actual real life Beverly Hills City Hall.
Is it really? That's cool. That's interesting.
But at the time, the exterior was very run down and the plants were dying. So the film crew cleaned it up, put in new plants. The Beverly Hills would not allow the film inside the police precinct. So they had to build a separate set, even though they did get to film with the Detroit police precinct is the actual Detroit precinct.
It definitely looks more realistic than the Beverly Hills one.
Beverly Hills would not also allow filming past 10:30 p.m. at night.
That had to make filming hard.
So, yeah. So, at night, scenes were shot in Pasadena. So, all the banana and the tailpipe and stuff, that's all in Pasadena.
Huh.
Yeah. All right. So, in the script, it was written that Axel stuffs potatoes he stole from the hotel kitchen. But due to time constraints, no kitchen scenes could be shot. So they rewrote it. So they took the banana from the lobby.
I guess it'd be easier to find bananas in a hotel than it would be potatoes. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the bananas line makes it funnier. Like, when you can't, I ain't falling for a potato in the tailpipe.
Yeah. Well, and banana is a funnier word, I think. Yeah,
that's
sure.
What I was saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to two. All right. So I'm just going to skip. According to the DVD documentary, Paramount originally wanted to produce a TV series. However, Eddie Murphy did not want to go back to television, so a sequel was made instead. Because, Eddie Murphy was in Saturday Night Live.
Because back then, it's hard for kids now to realize, because we live in the time of prestige television, where there's very little difference between movies and TV. But in the 80s and 90s, TV was considered the ghetto
for an actor. Yeah, he went to movies. Because he went from TV and then he went to doing movies. It's like now he's made it. So if he went back to TV,
that's it, like admitting failure.
Right, exactly.
That's a demotion back then.
Yeah, it's not now.
No.
Yeah.
I know, because now we live in times where actors do TV shows all the time and they have huge budgets. Back then, TV was cheap.
Yeah, it was very cheap. Not like it is today where you have to have much bigger budgets, but they're much better production, like much higher quality production. So director Tony Scott wanted Hans Zimmer to score, but Paramount insisted on a name composer. So they just kept Harold Faltermeyer,
which is good because visually it's different, but from a sound perspective, it's very much of a part of the part one.
Right. And Hans Zimmer at that time hadn't really done like a whole lot. So we think about, they wanted a name composer. Well, now Hans Zimmer is
huge.
A name composer.
Yeah.
But Faltermeyer was kind of like the guy at the time. And he already did the first one. I mean, I think it makes sense.
And the sound is so unique to that series that it'd be weird having another soundtrack to it.
Right. So Bridget Nielsen appears. So she was slated to star in the first Beverly Hills Cop because she was dating Sylvester Stallone at the time.
Yeah.
So when he dropped out, she dropped out too. So she did star in Rocky IV, which was in 1985, and in Cobra in 1986.
Yes.
Alongside Sylvester Stallone.
And they ended up getting married.
They married in 1985, but their marriage only lasted. How long do you think?
Didn't it last like a month? It was something
19 months.
It was really short. Because I know Stallone called that one of the biggest regrets of his life was doing that marriage. But
they did have a kid together, so
they did. Yeah. We should do Stallone at some point because Stallone's got a lot of really interesting stories. That guy's had a bizarre career.
Just to talk about Bridget Nielsen a little bit more is that She was rumored to be involved with director Tony Scott at the time of filming two, which was 1987. So this is after she divorced Stallone. But she's also admitted other one-night stands or being involved with other people like Sean Penn, Flavor Flav, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
Well, and at the time, she was statuesque.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she was a knockout at this time period. I mean, she was something.
Well, and we all, like, I don't know about you, but I know, like, I watched a little bit of that, like, Celebrity Rehab.
Yeah.
And they have Flavor Flav and Bridget Nelson. And it's kind of odd, but what's funny is that they were a couple before. Yeah. And then they, like, in rehab, they, like, kind of got back together.
Yeah.
And it was just...
It's kind of... It's weirdly really adorable weird. In a way, but...
Yeah, it's really strange. Yeah. Really odd. Yeah. Anyway, and I think it's also kind of funny that she was in the second one because, like, we talked about, like, how Billy Rosewood, you know, has, like, a Rambo poster. Yeah. And he has, like, a Cobra poster in his bedroom. In his bedroom.
And actually even sees the Cobra poster kind of laughs at it.
Yeah. It's kind of like Bruckheimer and, you know, Don Simpson are like,
your movie stinks.
Yeah.
And your version of this one would have sucked.
Yeah. And even at the end, you know, where they pull out all the arms, like Billy has all the arms.
Where George Reinhold accidentally fires a rocket launcher and kills the bad guys.
Yeah. And then Taggart's like, F Rambo. You know what I mean? It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, they're definitely like thumbing their nose.
They were still salty at Stallone for sure.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and it shows. I think it's the most tongue in cheek that you can be in a movie.
Yeah,
without being like over the top. I think.
Yeah,
it's great, especially if you know the backstory.
Yeah, if you know the backstory. Yeah, especially it's fun. Especially like even with Axel looking at the cover poster, just laughing at it.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fun.
Definitely fun. Bronson Pinchot, I mentioned he only returns in three. He was too busy during the second one doing Perfect Stranger. So he was too busy being Baku Bartokomus.
Yeah, which they could have worked him in if he had a time because it's a very episodic movie.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have brought him in for Afternoon. I mean,
But we got Perfect Strangers, which is one of those really great one-season sitcoms.
Yeah. No, it was on for... It was on for a long time.
No, it maybe had three seasons. We'll talk about, but it did not run for a long time. I promise you it didn't.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
I'm going to vamp for Ron while he does this.
Okay.
I'm going to continue. While he looks it up, I'm going to remind you again to go to video-culture.com. Check us out on Twitter at videoculture2. You know, and check us out on Facebook where we're there as Video Culture Podcast.
I do know that Tom Cruise like told Bronson Pinchot not to take the role for Baku Bartokomus in Perfect Strangers. 8 seasons.
It did not.
From March 25th, 1986 to August 6th, 1993.
It ran for 8 seasons.
8 seasons.
That didn't sound right, but I'm not.
August 6th of 1993.
I believe you. I mean, you did just Google it, but that's...
It was Wikipedia, so unless somebody lied.
No, I don't... I'm getting old, so I'm not... I've already had my one old man moment today. I'm not going to have another one. I'm like, that's not how I remember it, Sonny.
Yeah, no. Yeah, anyway.
But anyway, back to Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. Bronson Pinchot says he got Sarah's accent and mannerisms from a crew member that he worked on an earlier project. The crew member always said, "Don't be stupid."
Yeah.
So, I thought that was great. And I think I read that they... They made his part a little bit bigger because he did such a great
job. He's funny. Yeah. He's funny with very little material.
Yeah. He is. They just gave him a little bit. He kind of ran with it. Yeah, I think he wasn't even supposed to have an accent. I think he was just supposed to be a kind of a flamboyant act, and he kind of ad-libbed some of those parts, so they kept it. Yeah.
You know, and again, he did later work with Tony Scott with True Romance. He plays a weaselly little character in True Romance, and he's great in that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Which is funny because Tony Scott directed the second one, which Bronson Pinchot wasn't in.
Yeah. So cosmically, it all worked out.
The cement truck that Billy drives has a sticker saying DS/JB Construction Company. DS and JB stems for the film producers Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, that's it. That's it. Okay, so now I want to talk about the numbers.
Yeah, which are fascinating.
The numbers. Let's talk about the awards first. Academy Awards. It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. It was nominated for Best Original Motion Picture, Music, or Comedy and for the Golden Globes.
Yeah, this is the first one to clarify.
It was nominated for British Academy Film Awards.
The BAFTAs.
And it won, Harold Faltermeyer won, I should say, for Best Score and Soundtrack for Visual Media.
It's a great score.
So, yeah, I mentioned that in my Harold Faltermeyer article.
Again, you guys should check it out on the website.
So, when I say nominated, I now need to include the winners. Like, who won? So, this was nominated. It was so great. Who won for Best Original Screenplay for the Academy Awards in 1984? And that was this movie called Places in the Heart, starring Sally Field, Ed Harris, Amy Madigan, John Malkovich, and Danny Glover, about a Depression-era Texas widow who tries to save the family farm.
I'm sleepy already just thinking about it.
It just seems like a movie that Academy Awards would nominate, and it seems like a movie I have never seen.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but like, again, the synopsis you said made me sleepy. I'm not going
to... All right, excuse me, continuing on. The Golden Globe Awards, nominated for Best Motion Picture, Music, or Comedy. The winner, Romancing the Stone.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, but the other... movies that were nominated for the Golden Globe in that category for music or comedy, Ghostbusters and Splash.
What a strong year for movies, for comedies,
Right. I mean, Romancing the Stone beat out Ghostbusters?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to point that out.
Because arguably, Splash is better than Beverly Hills Cop and Romancing the Stone. And, of course, Ghostbusters is better than all three of them.
Right, that's what I wanted to say. That's what I want to point out to our audience. It's just because... that this one particular movie, won in this particular category for this particular award show doesn't mean that should be the best or should be awarded, because clearly, time really tells that, you know, of all those movies, Ghostbusters probably should have won.
Yeah, it's considered the Stone Cold classic out of that list.
Exactly.
Awards are not a true indicator of a film's quality.
Right.
It's subjective, you know. Time and time again, that's proven true.
I think Seth Rogen actually tweeted a little while ago. He thinks that Academy Awards should be given out 10 years later.
I saw that. I tend to agree with him because you can't know really what's going to stick with you even 6 months later.
Right.
You know, you just there's no way of knowing.
No. So, yeah, let's move on to two. Beverly Hills Cop 2. And I say Beverly Hills Cop 1. It's not Beverly Hills Cop 1. It's just Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. But we have to differentiate it, though. Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop 2. It was nominated for Best Original Song that was written by Harold Faltermeyer for Shakedown, which was supposed to be for Glenn Frey. But Glenn Frey couldn't do it because he was, like, sick. And they really needed the song to get done. So they got Bob Seger to do it.
And it's a great little 80s rock song.
Right. But who won for Best Original Song in that year?
No idea.
I've Had the Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, awards are dumb.
Golden Globe Awards, same story. Same song. Got nominated. I've Had the Time of My Life. Golden Raspberry Awards. It won for Worst Original Song, but not for Shakedown. I Want Your Sex by George Michael.
Yeah.
I mean, they play it in the strip club scene.
Honestly, it's a pretty good pop song. I'm going to take umbrage with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's light and it's fluffy. It's a trifle, but it's not a bad pop song.
Yeah. So, in three, I'll just mention three right quick. Yeah. It won the Golden Raspberry Awards for Worst Director, John Landis, and Worst Remake or Sequel.
Yeah, John Landis, you know, for guys who made a lot of... He's got a really interesting career because he either made classics or just stinkers. There's not a lot of middle ground with Landis' filmography, you know? It was wild that he either did really well or he did terrible, and not all in between.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. For the John Landis movies that I've seen, Okay, so here's the real numbers. Here's what I was talking about. So Beverly Hills Cop, the budget was $15
million. $15 million. It nothing.
$316 million.
That's in 1984 dollars, too. Do you realize nowadays that's like $800 million. Yeah, that's something.
I mean, that's huge. You invest 15, you get back 316. Yeah.
That's a crazy.
I mean, most of the time they're just looking at to like double their money.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's more than double, triple. I was like, I don't know how many times. I was like, I mean, explosive amount of money.
If you adjust for inflation, it's still one of the highest grossing comedies of all time, I believe.
Yes, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, is that in there?
Yeah, cool. I think so. I don't know if it's the highest grossing, but yeah.
It's in like the top five.
Yeah. Okay, so 2 had a budget of $20 million, so just $5 million more, which is understandable because you're like 3 years later. And everything was a little bit bigger and ramped up, which I thought was, that's pretty modest for $20 million.
Considering how big the film looks, too. Yeah.
$299 million.
Still an amazing amount of money.
I mean, not quite as much. They spent a little more. They got a little bit less back. But still, I mean, that's still a huge.
There's hit. A reason there was a 3.
There was a huge, huge hit.
But 3 did not do well financially. 3,
they spent $50 million. They're like, okay, we're going to up the stakes to $50 million. And they made $119 million.
Yeah, and they're like, it's time to maybe not do these again.
So maybe we doubled our money, and maybe a little, so maybe it's, you know, not so great. You know, maybe we're pushing things a little bit too much.
Yeah.
So Cobra, I just wanted to compare the numbers to Cobra because I thought that we should look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cobra was made a couple of years later, like 1986, where it had a budget of $25 million and grossed $160 million.
So successful.
Yeah.
But not nearly as big.
Right. And not nearly as memorable.
No. Well, it's remembered for all the wrong reasons, let's be honest.
Well, and that just to me says, you know, a lot of people went to go see it because Stallone was in it.
Yes. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, people remember Cobra, but the things they remember about are the weird things like you and I were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop made $15 million, so they made back what they invested in it. Okay, spent $15 million. They got it back in its first 5 days of release,
and at that time, that's super impressive.
It stayed number one for 13 consecutive weeks. Then 1 week at number two, then number one for another week, for a total of 14 weeks as the number one movie in America.
And what was the movie that bested it for that 1 week?
Witness.
Yeah, from one of our other episodes. And if you want to hear our episode about Witness, you would go to videocashculture.com and check it out in the episode archives.
Now, here's something I want to correct from that episode.
Okay.
Is that I said in Witness, and please, I'm sorry, but I said, because I pulled out my notes from that show, I said it opened with the same weekend as Beverly Hills Cop. Which that is a lie.
Obviously.
I was mistaken. Yeah. It was released at the same time as Beverly Hills Cop, but Beverly Hills Cop was released in December 5th, 1984. Witness was released on February 8th, 1985. But Beverly Hills Cop was number one at the theater when Witness was released, and after its release, it made it. Like it eventually made it to number one. It didn't make it like the first weekend, but it finally gained some speed and that was the movie that busted Beverly Hills Cop, which I thought was interesting because it's a movie that we've already talked
about.
Yeah,
there's weird connections that we don't think about before we do these things, but we discover later on. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But I just want to point out how unique it is to think about. Again, think about the time period, because again, for anyone who's listening to this now in 2019, it's unusual for a movie to be number one at the box office for 3 weeks now. That's a big deal if a movie can be number one for 3 weeks, maybe a month. If it's more than a month, people are writing about it for weeks afterwards. They're writing articles about why was it so successful. But again, Beverly Hills Cop, 13 weeks. That's wild.
Yeah, I asked. So this next tidbit of information, you were talking about the highest grossing. It was the highest grossing rated R film of all time when it was released. So at the time of its release, it busted all the highest grossing rated R film records. So until The Matrix Reloaded came out in 2003. So
it's a long time, though.
Right? But when I asked a few people, like I asked a couple people like around, like, what do you think the highest grossing like rated R movie is? And they were all like, I don't know, Terminator, Aliens. I'm like, no, no. But you have to think of a movie that like everyone has seen, and it's like rated R. So Beverly Hills Cop, and we to me, I don't think this day that we think like Beverly Hills Cop is rated R. Like you don't think about those.
Well, because it's weird how kind of forgotten the franchise is now.
Yeah,
no one talks about it. You don't see like people wearing like Beverly Hills Cop T-shirts.
Well, it's so ingrained in our culture that it's hard to think about that movie being rated R. Yeah. That's what I. That's what I mean. Yeah, because we see stuff like. You know, Star Wars and Indiana Jones. I mean, even Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was rated PG.
PG-13.
No, it was rated PG. It was the movie that got people going, I don't think that movie should be rated PG.
You're right.
And they created the PG-13 rating. But yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, but anyway, continuing on. The movie that it beat out for highest grossing film? You want to guess?
I have no idea.
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Which is not a good film.
Well, I mean, it had a record of 11.8 million. I mean, to make a rated R movie back then, you know, was like, oh, you're not making a movie to break box office records. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And also, Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton were very popular at the time.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that that'd be a big grossing film. But it's nothing you would expect, you know?
Right. But my point is... You know, they're not rated R movies. Were not blockbusters.
Yeah, they weren't intended to be huge crossover films.
It is the second highest grossing film worldwide. So yes, to your point, as far as like highest grossing movies,
of all time,
second
adjusted for inflation. Yeah.
I believe. Do you know what the first one is?
What's that?
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh.
Just mentioned. All right. Adjusted for inflation, Beverly Hills Cop is still the third grossing rated R film of all time behind The Exorcist and The Godfather.
That's good company to be in.
Yeah.
Where successful films go.
This is the first of 7 Eddie Murphy movies in a row to open at number one at the box office.
Yeah.
So I was mentioning before, like his filmography and how popular Eddie Murphy was. So he had right after Beverly Hills Cop, he did The Golden Child, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Raw, Coming to America, Harlem Nights, Another 48 Hours, Boomerang.
Yeah. Those were all big movies.
And then just missing the list right after that was a movie that you and I talked about possibly doing as a movie called The Distinguished Gentleman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which we maybe did at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. And then right after Distinguished Gentleman, he did Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah. But yeah, he had a hell of a run. And again, for our younger listeners, I know that's hard to imagine because he's kind of fallen into being this family friendly kind of. Shell of his former self, but he was a massive star.
Right. I mean, and really, The Golden Child was kind of like a reimagined sort of Axel Foley.
Yeah.
You know,
him in a fantasy setting.
Right. Coming to America was really creative.
Yeah.
Harlem Nights was very different because it was like a period film. Another 48 Hours, kind of another action-y film. And then Boomerang was way different.
Boomerang was huge, though. That was a really popular film at the time. Right.
So, very interesting. But, he didn't... that's movies in a row. I mean, I'm not talking about, like, he did this one movie where he plays this... No, those are movies, one right after another. Boom, 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 boom. All the way up to, like, 1992 or something like that. I mean, that's insane to start in 1984.
And go to, like 19... almost a decade of just being a huge box office draw.
Yeah.
That's really... That's almost unheard of now. It's unheard of nowadays. There's no one star that's that big anymore.
No.
Yeah, it's all franchises. It's all concepts. It's not star power.
Right. So... We have to think, well, what did the critics think about all this? I mean, this is what audiences did, right? Yeah. They went to the movie. They made it number one. What did the critics think about it?
I'm curious to hear.
Roger Ebert. What do you think he gave Beverly Hills Cop? What kind of?
He has a 4-star system, which always confuses me.
Yeah,
but because I do 5 stars, but he did 4, so I'm gonna guess he gave it 3 stars.
2.5.
The first one.
Yes.
Wow.
Murphy is one of the smartest and quickest young comic actors in the movies, but he is not an action hero, despite his success in 48 Hours. And by plugging him into an action movie, the producers of Beverly Hills Cop reveal a lack of confidence in their original story inspiration. It's like they had a story conference boiled down to, hey, gang, here's a great idea. Let's turn it into a standard idea and fill it with cliches and take out the satire and put in a lot of machine guns.
Yeah, he could be so savage when he wanted to be.
And he was vicious.
Yeah, but so well explained, and what a great writer.
But audiences didn't care. They went to go see this movie anyway. I mean, it was funny. I mean, they saw him on Saturday Night Live as, like, you know, Gumby and, like, you know,
but think about
Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
He's not objectively wrong. I just don't agree with it. You know, I see his points. You know, he's not wrong. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah. Well, and then I will have to say, I mean, action movies like Beverly Hills Cop are, you know, they're enjoyable movies. I mean, they're not cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be honest.
They're not high cinema.
They're not high cinema.
Yeah.
So the
Beverly Hills Cop 2?
No. I was moving on to Rotten Tomatoes. I see RT on my notes, and I'm like, what's RT? What's RT?
Yeah.
I need more coffee. Hold on.
You've only been doing this for over a year.
And to the credit of the intro, I'm trying not to have a coffee spill. Okay, hold on.
That was not just a bit of wordplay from our announcer. That actually is a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a clumsy idiot. All right.
You and me both. We bond over our clumsiness.
So 82% Rotten Tomatoes for Beverly Hills Cop and 81% audience score.
Yeah.
So I mean, pretty much matching. I mean, I call that a match.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good.
It is. I mean, not everyone's going to like it. It does have a lot of vulgarity in it. Some people don't like that. It's a little simple, so the critics could be a little hard on it. But it's a very much a crowd-pleasing, fun movie.
Ebert said, Ebert on 2. Now, you've already peaked.
By accident, so I know what Ebert thought. But
it was bad.
Why don't you let the audience know what Ebert thought of Beverly Hills Cop 2?
Oh, he gave it 1 star.
1 star, ladies and gentlemen. He hated it.
It's filled with wall-to-wall with the kind of routine action and violence that Hollywood extrudes by the yard and shrink wraps to order. But the sequel makes no particular effort to be funny and actually seems to take its ridiculous crime plot seriously. Eddie Murphy is not likable in this movie. He comes across as loud, arrogant bore. A little of him goes a long way. Somehow they've lost track of their original appealing idea.
Yeah, again, he's not saying things that are too different than what we were saying. He's just saying them in a lot harsher way.
Yeah, but I mean, he gave it 1 star. I mean, it's still funny. It's still enjoyable.
If I was going to rate them, I'd give the first one 3.5 stars.
Okay.
And I'd give the second one 3 stars.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, because to me, 3 stars is good.
Right.
So the first one to me is. It's above average. It's not great, but it's really good.
Yeah, it has a little bit of issues. It doesn't flow quite as well.
Yeah, it's thin, but it's still enjoyable. And 3 is just enjoyable, but it's certainly super flawed.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, eating, you know, some candy. You know, it's kind of like eating like really sweet cereal or something.
Yeah, it's like eating like Captain Crunch, and you know you have chocolate milk on top of it, and it tastes good at the moment. You're like, oh, this is awesome! I'm glad I did this. And then minutes over, you're just like, oh, I don't feel so good.
Like this was a bad decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, a little too rich, I'd say. But yeah, I mean, and I agree. I mean, and once again, I look at my notes and I think, RT, what's this?
Yeah, we've only been recording these things for a year now.
I'm so sorry. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 46% That's a critic score of Rotten Tomatoes.
The critics were harsh on it, man.
Yeah, I mean, the audience score only gives it 57%.
See, I think it's just, again, time has been kind to it. I mean, it's aggressively stupid, but it's enjoyable.
I mean, I liked it. I mean, I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, me too.
Second one.
Again, any movie that's going to have Judge Reinhold firing a rocket launcher and wielding a shotgun in a trench coat, I mean, I'm going to be down for it. I will defend.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what appeals to my personal sensibilities and the silly stuff that I like.
Right.
You know?
Well, three, Roger Ebert didn't even review.
he's like, screw it, I'm done.
Well, I can't give less than one star, guys.
I'm tired, guys.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 10%.
Yeah, I've never seen it all the way through.
I mean, 10%.
I've watched about half of it. I debated watching the entire thing, and I kind of want to now, but that makes me not want to. And once I remember how bad it really is,
I mean, that's like borderline like Police Academy score.
10%.
I mean, Police Academy probably, you know, some of the Police Academy movies might even rank higher. I don't know.
Yeah, 10%. That's low.
Yeah. I mean, and the audience, Rotten Tomatoes is only 35%.
That's the most telling when the audience is like, we don't even like this.
Yeah, it's 35%. I mean, I think Armed and Dangerous got close. I mean, it was close to those numbers, I think. Yeah. Armed and Dangerous, much more enjoyable movie than three, I think. I'm not even gonna go there. So all we have to do is talk about the last little bit, which is the future of the Beverly Hills Cop franchise.
What's going on with the franchise?
So nothing's been done since. I mean, Paramount, you know, they own, you know, anything you do for studio, they own the character.
They tried
so,
a few times, though, right?
Well, in 2013, CBS, they ordered, Paramount ordered, like, a Beverly Hills Cop pilot starring Brandon T. Jackson, starring his Axel Foley's son, Aaron. And they shot a pilot, but it never even made it to air. It never even, you know, nobody got to see it except for people that were involved with it.
Yeah.
So, and that whole thing was abandoned. So, but then, because of all of this, there was talk of a Beverly Hills Cop 4 that Axel Foley will return in an upcoming installment with Eddie Murphy reprising his role.
Now, that could work because Eddie Murphy in the past couple of years has started to take his career seriously again. He's not just making family goofball comedies anymore. He's starting to do more serious work again. So maybe it could work.
Yeah,
but I'm not gonna hold my breath.
Well, yeah, because eventually he stopped doing like rated R movies or whatever,
and just did like kid friendly nonsense,
right?
And just really bottom rung, terrible movies.
Yeah, like not even PG-13. Like if it wasn't
like
PG
and goofy and terrible stuff.
Well, I mean, he's the donkey in Shrek, which he's awesome. I mean, but that's probably one of the greatest things that he's done since.
Yeah.
You know,
He's had a few moments where he has kind of risen above that.
Yeah.
But for those people, he really kind of aimed below for many years.
Yeah.
And he's now starting to get back a little bit. He's starting to climb back up again. Mm-hmm. But we'll just have to see what happens.
Right.
You know, he's screwed up his career before. He could do it again.
So there's not a lot of information on it. And there's still like, there's no set in stone. Yeah. Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, may be producing, you know, and distributed by. It's been rumored that John Ashton, who played Taggart, is set to return. And it's also rumored that Judge Reinhold turned down the offer to reprise his role as Rosewood.
Well, then I don't want to see it then.
I know. If Rosewood and Taggart are not going to be in it, I don't think it can be.
There's not really much of a point to it.
Well,
then.
I mean, I mean, I know Taggart. I mean, he didn't make it into the third one.
Well, that bothers me, too. You know, it bothered me at the time. It bothers me now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe it's best left in the past. I mean, there's very few part fours that are worth a damn, and there's so much going against this concept. I mean, they already kind of screwed it up with part three.
Yeah,
I think we should kind of have to just let it go. Maybe reboot it one day with some other young actor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the time of Beverly Hills Cop is done.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So what do we have for? Shall we do the?
Well, before we do that, let's do the age old question.
Okay,
if you were to rent these two videotapes from the video store,
right,
watch them over the weekend back to back, would you get them back on time, or would you keep them an extra day?
I want to go watch Beverly Hills Cop again right now.
Yeah, I like both of them. I would
keep both of them.
I'd pay the late fees. I'd ask if I could buy two previously viewed copies of them from the bin.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like when you get done with these, when you pare down just to one to put on the, you know,
yeah,
leftover shelf, can I buy a copy?
Yeah, call me. I'll pay $15 for them on VHS. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That kind of thing.
For sure.
But I like them. I do. I recommend both of them.
Yeah, I highly recommend both of them.
Now, two is definitely not as good as one, but I recommend both.
I think two is just different. I think if you want a more, you know, like commercially, you know, big commercial blockbuster action movie.
Yeah.
That's also funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, it's kind of the same way as like Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Like Lethal Weapon was fun. And then like the two, they're going to ramp it up. It's the same sort of thing.
It scratches that itch for sure.
Yeah.
So recommendations, which is where you were going. I've got a movie that I think would pair really well.
Okay.
If you were to watch Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, and you don't want to watch Beverly Hills Cop 3 because it's not good. Yeah. But what if you wanted to fill in that third spot? What if you wanted to have a three movie night? What would you watch?
Uh-huh.
I'd recommend from 1998, directed by Michael Bay,
okay,
starring Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, the original Bad Boys.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one.
Because if you think about the tone and style of Bad Boys,
yeah,
it would roll seamlessly from Beverly Hills Cop 2 into Bad Boys. It was almost Beverly Hills Cop for the 90s.
Yeah, I agree.
Tone, the style.
Mm-hmm.
It took that kind of the shooting style that Tony Scott had and ramped it up even more. Yeah. It's very much a cotton candy film again. It's very much a popcorn movie. It's really just them being funny, but there's cool action, and it's not a great movie, but it is super fun.
Mm-hmm.
And stylistically, it is so very similar to Beverly Hills Cop 2,
mm-hmm,
that I think it would make a wonderful triple feature.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. I know I told you in our pre-production that I would probably say like 48 hours.
Yeah.
But I think that's too obvious of a choice. So I'm going to go with a little more modern movie as well. And I'm going to go with, because I just now thought of it. I was thinking about it when I was, you know, but I'm going to say the movie that he did a little bit later with Robert De Niro, where he plays somebody that's going to play a cop like on TV, called Showtime.
Oh, yeah. Showtime's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've not seen it in years, but I have fond memories of it.
Yeah, and it really is. I mean, it's like Eddie Murphy, kind of being Eddie Murphy, but there's also like Robert De Niro. So
yeah,
he's not like on all the time, but like, because Robert De Niro plays the real cop.
Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy plays this guy who's going to ride along with Robert De Niro. And he's like, Eddie Murphy is the actor.
Yeah.
And he's like going to learn how to play, you know, this guy on TV or whatever. Like, it's going to be a reality TV show or something like that. Or,
yeah. Like, he's trying to learn how to be a cop from shadowing Robert De Niro.
But they make a TV show out of him, you know, shadowing him or whatever.
Yeah. Like, I have fond memories of Showtime. I've not seen it since it came out, but I remember renting it on videotape and thinking it was a pretty, oddly enough, and remembering and thinking it was a fun movie. Yeah, right. I've not thought about it in forever. But that's a perfect example of kind of we should be talking about here on Video Culture.
Yeah. I mean,
so
good call. Yeah.
Jane
Russo, whatever.
Renee Russo?
Renee Russo, I think. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm bad with names.
We record these kind of late, you know.
I'm going to have some more coffee.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much for listening to our show. We really do appreciate
it. Yeah, we love you guys.
Yeah, we love you. Hit us up on Twitter. And, you know, or hit us up on Discuss on our website.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you.
Leave us some feedback for us, guys. You know, we want to hear from you.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I'm Matthew Estrie.
And I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch some movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, come hang out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together. We'll be right back.
Eddie Murphy is a Detroit cop. On vacation in Beverly Hills.
I just got off the phone with an Inspector Todd in Detroit. He says if you're out here investigating the Tandino murder, you needn't bother coming back.
I don't want to take it anymore.
For a man who claims to be on vacation, you look a lot like you're on a stakeout.
Stakeout? No. I'm picnicking. This is like a picnic area.
I have to ask you some questions about Michael Tandino.
I never been to a cell that had a phone in it.
Can I stay for a while? Because I ordered some pizza.
We have six witnesses that say you broke in and started tearing up the place, then jumped out the window.
May I help you?
Yeah. I'm looking for Victor Meadlin.
I have nothing to say to you.
How you doing? You guys don't know nothing about nothing, do you? You just got your badges and your guns and you're on the job, right? Make sure we get the right drinks, because if I drink club soda, I'll throw up.
You know, this is the cleanest and nicest police car I've ever been in my life. This thing's nice in my apartment.
Mrs. Bitch, you are the pride of your department in Detroit.
It seems painfully obvious you haven't the slightest idea who you're dealing with.
I don't know what y'all think I am, giving me some kind of food. Hurry up, quicker!
Crawl back to your little stone in Detroit before you get squashed.
Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop.